they're going to have to scramble for those LNG cargo. So I think we're in an energy super cycle. I think it started in 2020 after COVID. I think there's going to be pauses and corrections along the way, which I think we're having now. And I think heading into June, you know, the end of June, I think we, you know, we may see more of a pullback because of the talk. But I think later than that, and if it doesn't happen, then all of a sudden these supply constraints and days of inventory globally become a problem. And that's when I think we start seeing the takeoff in the price of crude oil. And WTI, if it blows above the high of early March of $119.40, I think we go up to the, you know, to the 130, 140, 150. And every time it goes up 5-10 bucks, you're going to see, you know, 10, 15%, maybe 20% moves in stocks.
Good day, everybody. It's me, just Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. Today, I'm with Joseph Schechter from the Schechter Energy Report. Joseph, it's great to have you back. How are you today?
Oh, wonderful. It's not a boring day today. Another $4 down on the price of oil, and stocks are coming into hopefully buy territory in the next week from now. And so I'm pretty happy because I do want to buy more energy stocks. And if we do get, you know, today we're just under $90, $89.40. But I think that if the positive chatter about the peace deal continues, we might come down to 80 or maybe a little lower. And I think that's going to give the next buy signal. If you remember, we had one in April of 2025, which worked out beautifully. And I think another one is coming shortly.
Joseph, I've got whiplash from all the stuff that's been going on. You know, do we want peace? Do we want war? I can't tell. And from what you're hearing, how close are we to a deal? Are you anticipating a deal? Are you anticipating good news? What are things you're looking at, and what are you hearing?
Well, the U.S. administration is negotiating with the moderates from the political side of the government, and when they get a MOU with the 14 points they're talking about negotiated in Qatar or Oman or where, you know, or Pakistan, wherever, you know, because they're moving the negotiations around from place to place. If they get to a deal, that's going to be positively received by the market, and the price of crude will go from that $89.40 that we are today on, you know, Wednesday, May 27th, and we might go down below 80, and that's where I think we get another buying opportunity, because I think once that deal is sent back to Tehran, that it's not going to be acceptable to the Supreme Leader or the IRGC. And that's going to be when, you know, Trump's going to get frustrated because he thought he had a deal. But again, there's so many different constituencies in Iran. And, you know, the most open to a deal are the moderate politicians, but the IRGC are militant. The Supreme Leader is militant. And if he says no, then it means no. And at that point, President Trump will have to look at the military option again. If you look at today's press conference, he said, if they don't come, the guy on my left is going to go back to war. The guy on his left was the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. So I think that near term, we get positive news and noise, and we might get a great buying opportunity to add to positions. And then if we get a war, then the price of oil goes up. And I think the stocks will go up to new highs for 2026.
When you say new highs, what kind of, how high are we talking about?
Well, you know, I think you need to either look at stocks or XLE or whatever. But I would say that if we pull back, we're 89.42 as I look at the screen in front of me. If we go to 80, I think there's going to be a 10-15% correction in the oil and gas stocks because they had a great move. In total, that would be about a 20-25% correction from the high. But then you get the opportunity to buy. And if I'm right that we go above that 119.40, which we were in early March when the, you know, war started, I think we'll see potentially above, once we break above 120, we could see stocks go parabolic. Just like we've seen with the semis and the AI names and every, you know, all the hot stocks. And I think we could see, 130 to 150 on the price of WTI. And that would mean stocks could go up 30 to 50% from where I think they will be in the next week or two on the good news of the discussions.
So, in terms of what each side wants from the deal, do you see us being close? Are we, when you say good news, I'd like to know how likely you think that is. Do you think that are we expecting a lot of volatility in the next couple of weeks here?
I think we're going to see extreme volatility, as I said, down another $10 in the near term, and then up
Yeah.
from that, maybe 50. So
Wow.
volatility is here for the next number of months. I think the key thing is the president wants to hear that there's an acceptance to reopen the Straits of Hormuz. It'll take 30 days to clear the mines and make sure all the waterways are available, and then they'll test it out. The question will be, what will insurers do? Will they need American military or and other militaries from NATO to convoy them out? But if there's no attacks and things get back to normal, then you could see the price of oil go down maybe to mid-70s, and that's what President Trump wants because he wants sub $2 gas in time for the November elections, and so he's got a vested interest in getting a deal. The problem is, the two things that he started the war on, which is the nuclear program and stopping their support of terrorism, they're all saying that that's going to be negotiated in the next 60 days. They want to get the access to the Straits of Hormuz decided first, and then they'll go to all the tough stuff afterwards. And that tough stuff, I think, is going to be where the intransigence from Tehran is going to happen, and the moderates are not going to be able to push it through. And that's when we find out that Trump has to go back to knock off more of the IRGC leaders, their military equipment, their drone factories, their ballistic missile factories. And I think the next phase of the war could get quite nasty if it happens. So the near term, you're going to have a lot of positive noise because Straits of Hormuz. And then when it comes down to the difficult discussions thereafter, which will happen over a period of 60 days, which to me is a short period of time for such a big issue, because it's not only, the issue of, oh, you're going to take that nuclear material out. Some people are throwing out that it might go to China. Others are saying it'll go to one of the NATO European countries, but under UN inspectors. The UN inspectors will go in and check everything out in Iran to make sure that they don't have any more nuclear material at 60%, that they can move to 90% quickly and have a nuclear weapon. And I think the US presidents, Democratic and Republican, have all said that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, they would use it against their enemies. And that really is the key, that they need to remove that nuclear material, because it could take only 2 weeks to upgrade it to weapons grade. And they have the ballistic missiles, so they could just move it into a ballistic missile. And the first target would be Israel.
So, in terms of the election, the timeline, how closely are you watching that in terms of the investing in oil? Is that a strong part of the equation?
Well, the election is where President Trump can say there's no, we don't have a problem supplying oil in the United States because we have 23.7 million barrels of production and we consume 21, and so we're an exporter of light crude from the Permian, and then we bring in heavies from Canada, Mexico, and Venezuela. So the net effect is the refineries have enough. There's no supply issue. It's a price issue. And so he wants to have the straits open, and all of the ships that are waiting to go and go to China, go to South Korea, go to Japan, and the countries that need the oil, that they would get it. That would then we would have to rebuild supplies that have been used up, i.e., if you remember, the SPRs, Strategic Petroleum Reserves, were taken down. The IEA put out one. The US put out one. Every week, we're seeing when the EIA data comes out, which will be tomorrow, we're going to see the SPR going down because they're taking oil out of the SPR to sell it to make sure there's adequate inventories and that they can supply the world. The ships that used to go into the Persian Gulf to get oil, and the president today was saying, you know, there used to be 1 million barrel a day crude ships. Now, then they went to two, which is the norm, and there's now a few 4 million barrel a day ships out there. So there's some monster ships out there taking oil, and of course, a lot of them are heading to the U.S. Gulf Coast and loading up there, which of course is you know, helping the U.S. balance of trade. And helping the world from a supply shock that could get very bad as we head into winter of 26-27.
When you say supply shock getting really bad at winter time, you know, what kind of ramifications are we looking at here, and what are you watching closely that would determine where things are headed?
Okay, normal inventories globally between onshore and on the sea. Because of just the way the supply chain, you know, from the producer, you move it by ship to the consumer puts it into their pipelines, into their refineries, and then to the consumer at the gas station. We normally have between 88 and 92 days of inventory. We were at 90 days in Q4 2025. The data that came out from Q1 said we've come down to 88 days, but that's only 1 month. Remember, just March.
Yeah.
So if you take April, May, and June at the, you know, with the restrictions that we've had, we could be 83, 84 days. The lowest number I've seen and that we've seen was in 2008. If you remember, if you pull out a chart on crude oil, we went from $87 to $147 in July. So in 7 months, we went up from $87 to $147. Because we were at 79 days. We were too tight. We didn't have enough. And people were scrambling to get oil for the refineries and to make sure the gas stations had gas and diesel for the consumer. So if we get down, you know, 84 is, you know, becomes published in July, August, that's going to freak out the markets. And so we need to have a peace deal by then and the straits open. Because if not, and we get below 80, I think we could see parabolic rises in the price of oil. And if you look at the parabolic moves we've seen in MEM stocks and AI, semiconductors now, I think that could happen to the energy sector. So for those of you in the United States, you know, take a look at the producers in the United States, oily names, you know, the service sector, because they're going to benefit, the Schlumbergers, Baker Hughes, Halliburton's. Look at the natural gas sector, because that's going to tighten up because LNG is going to be tight. Europe doesn't have enough gas for winter of next year. They're going to start scrambling. Right now, you can get $17, $18 in MMBTU in Asia because they're scrambling. Right now, the price in Europe is $14. I bet you that the price in Europe will be higher in September, October, because they're going to start scrambling because, for example, Germany has less than 30% in storage. And so when you get it's into September and everybody starts worrying about a cold winter, they're going to have to move that up to 80 or 90 by October, November. They're going to have to scramble for those LNG cargoes. So I think we're in an energy super cycle. I think it started in 2020 after COVID. I think there's going to be pauses and corrections along the way, which I think we're having now. And I think heading into June, you know, the end of June, I think we may see more of a pullback because of the talk, but I think later than that, and if it doesn't happen, then all of a sudden these supply constraints and days of inventory globally become a problem. And that's when I think we start seeing the takeoff in the price of crude oil. And WTI, if it blows above the high of early March of $119.40, I think we go up to the 130, 140, 150, and every time it goes up 5-10 bucks, you're going to see, you know, 10-15%, maybe 20% moves in stocks. So if it happens that we get to 150, you could see 30-50% moves in the upside from where we are when this correction finishes in the next 2 weeks. I think the
wow.
For investors, get your buy list ready. Find stocks that fit your portfolio needs, talk to your investment advisor, and then be ready to buy when we see the good news take oil down below 80. From a Canadian perspective, we have stocks that are bargains right now that are yielding 6%. Large liquid names, they're OTC listed as well. So you can buy them in the States as well as in Canada. We cover, 34 names. We have conservative, large cap, multi-billion dollar companies, 10, 20 billion. We have some that are, 500 million. So there's lots of opportunity both in the royalty sector for Canada, in the, dividend yield and growth side, and then entrepreneurial companies where the drill bit can make a big difference. And so people can go to our website and they can see some of our complementary older research. And if they find that that's interesting and they would like to participate, one thing to remember is Canada's oil basin is not as drilled up as the United States. And we have longer life reserves than they do in the United States. And so you guys have the Permian and the Eagle Ford and all those names that have been very successful. We have the Montney, the Duvernay, the Charlie Lake, the Clearwater. And so a lot of American companies are now coming back into Canada because, security of supply is now becoming more and more important. And Canada has a terrific basin. We have the pipeline systems into the United States. We're building pipelines to the West Coast so we can have more access to Asia. And so Canada is like an emerging Permian, like the early days of the Permian versus the more mature Permian. Doesn't mean the Permian is finished. The Permian, we just saw Devon do a big buy from the United States government for land in New Mexico and Texas, and they paid $4 billion. And, 25, I don't think they were called, land tenure. They bought those for $2.5 billion. The land price they paid to access was the highest paid for Permian land ever. And so, Devon is not a small company. It's a very smart company. And if they see that the rates of return are there, that's a big positive for the U.S. basin. And an even more positive for the Canadian basin because we're underexplored. And we have the key thing is egress. You have to be able to take the product to market. And so in the case of the Permian, they have the oil pipelines to take the oil, but they don't have a place to move the natural gas until they add more pipelines. So right now, in many of the basins in the Permian, you can find where you're getting a great price for oil. $89 is a great number. But you're not getting anything. You even have to pay somebody to take the natural gas. So you're getting negative pricing on natural gas. We're getting, so right now the U.S. NYMEX price is around $3 U.S. Our AECO price in Canada is about $1.60. That should be the same as the States. If the U.S. is $3 NYMEX, we should be $3 Canadian. The difference of our Canadian dollar equals the transportation difference.
So, a couple questions here. One, you mentioned a super cycle, and what part of what ending of the super cycle are we in? And when you look at the volatility of oil, are we seeing more a reaction to supply and demand and fundamentals, or headline driven fear around things like the Hormuz? And how do you balance, or how do you understand that dynamic? If you can talk about that.
The noise you're talking about is what we've seen in every cycle. 74 to 81, we had a war in the Middle East. You had OPEC nationalizing the oil. You had the Shah of Iran deposed. So there was always noise in the cycles. And then you go to, 1999 to 08, that was when China became the new buyer of oil. If you remember in 99, when they opened the doors to capitalism under a communist system, they were producing 4 million barrels a day and consuming 3.5. They were an exporter of 500,000. Now, just by the time you got to 2008, they were consuming 14 million, still producing 4. So they were importing 10 million. Today, they consume 17 and they're importing 12 million barrels. So, the consuming nations of China, South Korea, Japan, and European countries, they do not have their own resources. They have to be getting it from the States. They have to be getting it from the Middle East. And so, when they had the CERA conference in Houston, which is the biggest U.S. conference for energy, the big discussion was, where can we get safe and secure molecules from to make sure our people don't freeze in the winter? And so
Yeah.
the consuming nations are desperate, and they're coming to Canada. Germany just did a deal to buy LNG, where that LNG will get exported to Japan, but other companies that buy that to ship to Japan will free up gas that they have coming from the Middle East or from Trinidad or from other places, and then use that to meet the demands in Europe. Germany is desperate for natural gas, so they're trying to build long-term relationships to get at it. And the Canadian companies have between 25 and 40 years of natural gas reserves at high volume. So that really becomes, and if you're building an LNG plant, it has a life of 25 years. So that's important to the utilities around the world, where they can get a safe, secure supply. And remember, data centers is becoming a big thing, and so more power is needed. So people are talking small modular reactors. That's going to take time and to build, and we don't know the cost. You want to do solar, you can do solar if you can get the approvals to for the land. Utilities are looking at all kinds of energy, renewables to bring on, but they're such a small part. So the only way you can go and meet the demands of the consumer and the industrial users is to go to use of natural gas. So I'm very bullish on natural gas. I'm bullish long term on oil. I think there's going to be volatility where you see 5, 10, 20% moves in the commodity. Part of it is weather related. When you get a hot summer, air conditioning demand goes up, natural gas demand goes up. Then you
Yeah.
go into the shoulder seasons of the fall, prices come down. Then you get into the cold weather and you get the Arctic front coming down into Texas, where they have no insulation on their homes, and the price goes to $6 or $8. So the volatility will be there because of seasonality, because of geopolitics, because of transportation issues. It's always going to be a volatile sector, but it's going to be one where the prices will be moving north. And so you want to be involved in companies. And this is really the theme we're going with. Going back 6 months ago, you were buying companies that were using their cash flow to pay down debt, have a strong balance sheet, and then do shareholder returns, normal course issuer bids or dividends or both. Now we're seeing companies being told by investors, we want to see growth. We want you to grow your production base because the demand is there from the secure suppliers, i.e., the United States and Canada. And so that's where the story comes from. And Canadian stocks on a multiple basis are trading cheaper than US. Canadian stocks on a price to net asset value, be it the proved developed producing or 1P or 2P, our numbers, when you put an equal company from the US against Canada, you've got the bargain. And then add to that, you've got a Canadian dollar that trades at 73 cents. Hey, come on, guys. This is everything's on sale. It's like your Amazon, day or whatever, the one
Prime Day.
Alibaba day. That's what we're doing in Canada. We're on sale. And for a couple of reasons, you could say, well, why are we so cheap? One, our previous prime minister was anti-resource development. Our new prime minister is pro it, but he wants it under very tight environmental controls. And three, we have a very strong system in a political system in Canada, where First Nations have involvement in the approval and going through their ancestral lands. So they have to be part of the solution. They have to get economic benefit. They've got to get jobs, and that all of is part of the decision making. Versus, if you're doing something in Texas, you can just pay the landowner for the right of way. You can build a pipeline. You can pay them a royalty to drill on their land. So the system is easier in the States, but the opportunity may be bigger in Canada.
All right, so Couple questions. One, so you're saying that last time in the last super cycle, there was a lot of noise, a lot of conflict, a lot of war and drama and all that stuff. How do you understand the noise, however, and do you watch it carefully? Are you looking at it? So in terms of whether or not the deal goes through with Iran, you're saying that wintertime comes, Europe's got a huge deficit and is already scrambling. And so one, are they, has that been priced in already, or what are you seeing?
Again, weather can make it to where you can see massive spikes. If you pull up the chart on NYMEX, you can see where when there was cold weather, it got up to $15 for short periods of time. And with oil, whenever you've seen a political or geopolitical event, you've seen spikes up. So it happens. And what I, my approach to it is, my job is number one, to tell people about great stories and at what prices they're bargains. And then the second thing is to tell people we're overbought and then we're oversold. And when it's oversold, we send out action alerts saying we think the market's oversold. Here's the evidence that we see. Here's the stocks that we, you know, we add new names to new buys to our recommended list. And then we go through the recommended list that on the recommended list, these stocks are the biggest bargains. And we have our groups broken in three: conservative stocks, which are big, big balance sheets, dividends, you know, all the strongest needs for conservative investors; growth, where the focus is on having the ability to drill bit to make a difference; and then entrepreneurial. A lot of them are smaller and a bit more speculative, but in, you know, like everything, you know, there's speculative investors in the States, you know, we're looking for the, you know, what's the next Nvidia, you know, some small company startup. That's the same thing as what I would say our entrepreneurial would be, our smaller E&P companies or service companies that potentially could do extremely well going forward.
Joseph, for those who are wanting to learn about what companies, what sort of companies to invest in, what to avoid, what are the major questions you're asking that we should be asking? You know, what questions are you asking to determine if they go into your portfolio?
Yeah, the first thing you want to do is financial strength. You want to have a company that, you know, debt's under control, that they have the ability with free funds flow to drill and grow their business. That's number one. Number two, people. You want people who've done it before, who have successful track records, because if they've done it before in the base institute you're talking about now, that's a good check mark. Three, insider ownership. I want their money before mine. I want them to have a big, significant ownership. I don't want them taking the big payday, big bonus. You know, we're a risk business. You put your money at risk before I'll put our money at risk. So we want that to be the case where, you know, people do that. And then the projects matter. You've got to have projects that have not just treadmill opportunities where if you're producing 10,000 BOEs a day, you can keep on drilling 10,000. I want to see companies that have 10,000 BOED and have the land and the opportunities to grow to 20 or 30,000 in the next 10 years. And so those are the check marks I'd be looking for. And we do that with every company we cover. We also look at the service sector. You know, right now, if you look at the Baker Hughes data, we're beginning to see a pickup in the drilling, you know, a little bit now, mostly in natural gas because of the LNG takeaway capacity. But at some point, I think you're going to see oil pick up because everybody's waiting to see, you know, where's oil going to be when the war's over? Is it going to be $50 again, you know, sub 60, or is it going to be 90? So I'm using $80 WTI for my data for 2026, and I'm using $90 for 2027 because I think it's going to take a long time to rebuild the destroyed infrastructure in the Middle East. You know, Qatar's lost two LNG trains. Pipelines, ports, a lot of things have been destroyed, and that's going to take time. And I think that, you know, to rebuild the SPRs, the Strategic Petroleum Reserves that we've taken out to meet the demands now, that's going to take time. So we've got a multi-year opportunity. And then if demand grows by 1 to 1.2 million barrels per day, which it has been growing, and so if you have economic growth, and most of the demand is coming from the emerging world, So if we want African countries or Asian countries to bring on more copper, more nickel, more aluminum, more critical minerals, those countries are going to need a lot to consume a lot of fossil fuels, be it coal, be it oil, be it natural gas. And the people working there are going to want to have a better quality of life. Many of them don't have running water or electricity. So if they're going to say, okay, we're going to allow you to build a nickel mine or a copper mine, we need to have housing that's good. We need schools for our people. We need hospitals for people. You just add ka-chink, ka-chink, ka-chink. We need more fossil fuels. The question is, do you want to do coal? Do you want to do oil? Do you want to do natural gas? Do you want to do renewables? So each country is going to be different because of their, you know, whatever their footprint is and what capabilities they have. You know, we need critical minerals. If you're going to have data centers, you need copper. And right now we're short copper, and that's why copper's done well. We're, you know, lithium, if we're going to have more batteries for in more EVs, we need that. We need critical minerals for the defense industry. We need it for, you know, all the high tech things. Helium, something you don't even think about. A lot of that comes from the Gulf, you know, from the
Did you say Gulf. Helium?
Helium, yeah. And they need it when they're making semiconductor chips. So if you don't have helium, how's NVIDIA going to build the chips?
Things you don't think about.
And people don't think about it.
So speaking of copper and lithium and, you know, energy and demand, you know, last time we talked a little bit about how oil has been so hated or is gone out of vogue. And, you know, we're talking about green energy. How much lifetime do you have, or how much relevance do you think oil has? I mean, are we looking at another 10 years that oil is relevant, 30? I mean, what are we looking at here?
I think you got to divide it between the OECD and the emerging world. The OECD is already showing declines in demand because of fuel efficiency of cars, because of EV purchases, because of, you know, going to, you know, using coal, small modular reactors. So oil in some of those countries is going down. But remember, a big part of the U.S. consumption is for plastics. So it's in a thing called other oils. If you look at the EIA data that comes out every week, it shows other oils, and that's really a big component, polyethylene, polystyrene, all the things that, you know, that just look around you. There's a lot of, you know, places where you're using plastic there, the microphone, you know, there's so many things we don't think of, my glasses. So all of that is being used now in the OECD world. The non-OECD world, the emerging world, that's where the big demand is going to come. As I said, if we want them to bring on critical minerals, if we want them to, you know, grow the things we need to have an EV world in the industrial world, they're going to have to consume a lot, not only for the plants and the construction of the mines, etc., but also for the upgrading, you know, of nickel or copper into copper cathodes. All of that's going to be intense use of energy, and both that's natural gas and oil. Now, where will we be 30, 40 years from now? If you're a Star Trek fan, we all want to know if we're going to have lithium crystals, or, you know, are we going to have antimatter driven facilities? Again, I think that's going to happen after I'm dead, and probably, you know, way past my grandkids' lifetimes. So from the point of view of consumption, I don't believe we are going to we will maybe use less per capita. But because we're now bringing it to the third world, the total consumption will rise, and it'll be mostly the growth of, let's say, the next 10, 12 million barrels of demand growth into, let's say, 2034, 2035. All of that demand growth is coming from the third world. It's not coming from the OECD.
Very helpful. Joseph, if you can tell us a little bit about the Schecter Energy Report, how often does the report come out? I know that you have alert signals, but, you know, if you can tell us who is it geared towards and how can people benefit and how can people find you?
Yeah, they can just go to www.schecterenergyreport.ca and you'll have that on your website. We put out two SER reports, Schecter Energy Research, the team puts out twice a month. So we're putting our next one out tomorrow, and then every 2 weeks or so, we put out another one. Right now, we're spending time on the Q1 report. So this report coming out tomorrow will have 16 companies in it. So it's a big report. The team has worked hard on getting that together. And then we put out weekly something called Ion Energy. So the Ion Energy doesn't go into companies, but it goes into the macro side. So all the stuff that we've been talking about today is in there. And so we update that on a weekly basis from, whatever noise comes out, whatever it does. And we cover what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the energy sector around the world, and what's going on from a geopolitical side. So all of that together is the Schachter Energy Report. If people just want the macro, they can go to Substack, and we have the Ion Energy, Schachter Ion Energy on Substack. The team are we you know we have an both on the subscriptions, we have both an annual and a quarterly. And my marketing person said that you were offered a discount for your followers, $100 off the annual with a code NRS100. So NRS, which is your natural resource, stocks, 100. So take advantage of it. Take a look at the product. If I'm right that this super cycle lasts into the early 2030s, that means we've got a lot of running room. If I would use a golf analogy, I'd say we're on the fourth hole of the golf course. There's a lot of golf to play yet. And so we're going to have volatility. My job is to tell you when we get to extremes, overbought, oversold, hold off buying new money, or if your trader takes profits, you come down on the low end, time to load up again. We've been advising people to be at 80% of their target weight. I believe when I send out the next buy signal, we'll be saying take yourself to 100% of your target weight. And remember, energy in the S&P 500 is minuscule. But if you go back to energy in 1981 or 2008, it was a big part of the S&P 500. So that's going to be part of the swing that we see. Just look at what was the weight of semiconductors 2 years ago versus today? I think people
Right.
don't realize how quick these things can happen. I don't believe it'll be as quick as the semis and the and the and the and the and the microns of the world, the memory. But I think it's going to be a very good period for people, and it won't have the volatility they have. But it will also, many of them give you good dividend yield, so you'll get more than you can get in the bank, and then you have the patience to be there for the cycle. And if you go to the cycles, pick any stock that was around in 1999 to 08, and I would bet you that where we went from sub $10 to 147, so we're talking about a 15 bagger. There were many stocks that were 20 and 30 baggers. So that's how this cycle can be
Wow.
so rewarding. And in 74 to 81, we had the price of oil go from sub, $2.50 to 36. Again, a big home run. And many stocks were 15, 20 baggers. So we've had a good run. We're correcting now, but I think the correction will end in the next couple of weeks. Stocks will be 10, 15% cheaper, and it'll probably be time to load up. So if you want to, if your people want to know where the bargains are in Canada, diversify a little from the U.S., then just become subscribers, and you and I will be talking quarterly, and you can tell me, "Hey Joseph, that was a great call," or "Hey Joseph, what the hell happened?"
For those listening, please take advantage of that if you're interested in loading up the truck and taking advantage of the super cycle. The Schachter Energy Report is a good place to look. Again, they're offering a $100 discount for the first year of the report. The coupon code NRS100. Please take advantage of that. That will be the link, and the code will be in the show notes. Joseph, lots going on. Everyone, buckle up. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people like Joseph Schechter. So, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was fun to work, having the discussion with you.